Tonight is Wednesday night, December 24th, or third day of the month of Tevet. This is the women's Mishnah share. We're up to the first Parak Maseches Kedushin, in the middle of the sugya of Mitzvah Aseh Shezman Groma.
Okay, Rabotai. We'll pick up where we left off. Okay, so let me just refresh our memories. The Mishnah had stated that all mitzvot asei shehazman grama, mitzvot that are somehow time related, nashim chayavot, nashim pturot, women are exempt from such a mitzvah. We spent a week or two trying to identify the source of that particular halacha. The Gemara initially presented a four-step process in order to arrive at the truth. The comparison was made, step number one. In the Parsha of Shema, the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is written right next to the mitzvah of Tefillin. We know from elsewhere that women are exempt from the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Because it says, V'limadetem otam et bineichem, the drash is, V'lo et binotechem. So that's step number two. Step number three is you compare, just as women are exempt from Talmud Torah, they're exempt from the mitzvah of tefillin. Step number three, tefillin happens to be a mitzvah asei shehazman grama. Therefore, I now conclude that women are exempt from all mitzvot asei shehazman grama. That's what the Gemara had said. The Gemara offered a variety of challenges to that particular presentation. Particularly one which was a thorny one was the drash concerning sukkah. In relationship to the mitzvah of sukkah, the Gemara in Masechet Sukkot cites a special pasuk. As to how it arrived, it's a little difficult to understand how. But based on the fact that it said, Kol ha-ezrach yeshvu basukot, the word ezrach is totally superfluous. There's no reason why I should assume that it's only a citizen of Israel should observe. What does that phrase mean? So for some reason, the Gemara darshened lehotzi et hanashim, to exclude women. So the Gemara asked, well, why in the world do I need an exclusion for women from the mitzvah of sukkah? Sukkah is a mitzvah tasei shezman grama. If the rule is that they're exempt from all mitzvot tasei shezman grama, you don't need a special derivation. So in fact, maybe the truth is the exact opposite. That women are really obligated to observe every mitzvah tasei shezman grama. And therefore they would have been obligated to observe the mitzvah of sukkah as well. That's why I have a pasuk lehazrach to eliminate it. That was the Gemara's question. Gemara answered, no, no. Really the rule is that mitzvot aseh shazman grama, women are exempt. But for some reason, I would have imagined that women are obligated to observe sukkah. Sukkah might be an exception to the rule. For one of two reasons. Number one, because it says basukot teshvu, you have to dwell as a family. Live as you would reside in your house. That normally means couples live together. As a result, I would imagine that women for some reason have to eat in the sukkah despite the fact that it's a mitzvah tasei shezman grama. To eliminate that possibility, I would now say, I have the word ho-ezrach to eliminate it. Or, or perhaps another reason, I might have compared sukkah to matzah. Now matzah is a mitzvah sasesh's man grama. It's only one night a year that you're obligated to eat matzah. And nonetheless, women are obligated to observe that mitzvah. So I could have employed was what is known as the famous hekesh tetvav tetvav, comparing rules of the 15th of Nisan and applying them to the 15th of Tishrei. Just as the 15th of Nisan, women are obligated to eat matzah, despite the fact that it's a mitzvah taseh shezman grama, perhaps they're obligated to eat in the sukkah as well. So therefore, the word ha'ezrach tells me, don't go there. Don't go there. Don't go there. So, the conclusion of the Gemara now is restored. Women are exempt from mitzvat aseh shezman grama. Why? Because I have this unusual Torah shebe'al peh drash. The four-step drash. Compare tefillin to Talmud Torah. Talmud Torah, they're exempt. Tefillin, they're exempt. Tefillin is a mitzvah aseh shezman grama. Therefore, they're exempt from all mitzvot aseh shezman grama. That's what the Gemara said. Fine. So, I just throw in as a matter of a fact, I wasn't there, but somebody told me about Professor Lyman's. Anybody there at Professor Schneilheim's afternoon presentation?
No.
Okay. So, he spoke about various instances where the Gemara tries to establish a drash based on a text of the Torah, and the text of the Torah doesn't exist. Doesn't exist. I'm going to show you, I'll give you two illustrations that he gave. There is a drash in the Gemara that tefillin have to have four parshiyot in it. Four parshiyot. Okay. How do we know that tefillin have to have four parshiyot? The Torah says, ukshartam le'ot al yadecha, just tie a sign. How do you know it's four parshiyot? So the Gemara says, because the word totafot, which appears four times in the text, twice it is written chaser, without a vav, and once it's written with a vav. So if it's written without a vav, in theory, had you not had a third grade teacher to read it properly of totafot, you could have read it totafat, which means one. So one plus one plus two equals four. One time it's written with a vav, you can't make them, you have to read it totafot. Good. So the Gemara says you need four tefillin to fill it. There is not one Sefer Torah in the world where the word totafot appears with a vav in it. Not one. Every single time we write the word totafot, it appears chaser without a vav. Every single time. So he cited a tshuva of the Rashba, and the Rashba said, I don't care what the Torah says. I don't care that's the way we wrote the Torah. We must be writing the Torah incorrectly. Because the drash in the Gemara can't be wrong.
Why would that take precedence over the Torah?
I'm just telling you what the Rashba and the Ritva, every one of his students, the Ran, the Rashba, every single one of them said, change the text of the Torah. Because we have a Masorah, we have a tradition from generation to generation, that this is the source that there are four parshiot in tefillin.
Well, not to be sacrilegious, but if they said it, I guess we can say it. So what if someone by accident miswrote what not supposed to have ever
okay. Been every single sofer in the world made that mistake. How does a sofer write a Sefer Torah?
It happened at the very beginning of the chain, kind of, and then it got but perpetuated.
But nobody caught it the first generation, two generations? How do you write a Sefer Torah? You have to copy it from an existing Sefer Torah.
Right.
Existing Sefer Torah.
One mistake, and then it
but that's the only.
Liberate.
You mean tell me, but that if that was the only Sefer Torah in the world, from which every other one was copied. So if that happened in Moshe Rabbeinu's time, maybe. Unlikely. I'll give you a second one. A second one. How many walls does a sukkah have to have?
Three
walls. Correct. How does the Gemara arrive at three walls? Because one time the word Sukkot is written with a vav, that's two. Twice it's written without a vav, that's four. So one you take off, one time you need the word basukkot to tell you how to live in the sukkah. It's not available for a drash. Not available for a drash. That the Gemara operates all the time. So what am I left with? Three. One where it's written with a vav, that's two walls. A third one which is written without a vav, that's three walls. And then there's a halacha l'moshe m'Sinai that the third wall only has to be one tefach wide. So all you need is two walls, let's say illustrate here, one, two, and let's say one and two, and the third wall only has to be this wide. That's it. It doesn't have to go the whole length. That's it. Very nice. There is not one Sefer Torah in the world where the word Basukot is written with a vav. Not one. And again, from the Rashba until the Chassam Sefer, they're always writing, what do you mean? The Gemara says it has a vav. Change your Sefer Torah. And not one, listen to who is telling us to change the Sefer Torah. Not the president of the RCA. Not the Rav HaRashi of Medinat Yisrael. The Rashba. The Ran. The Chassam Sofer are telling us to change the Sefer Torah. And not one Sofer ever made a change. Not one Sofer ever made a change. But the fact that the Rashba was bold enough to say, change the Sefer Torah, why did he say change the Sefer Torah? Why? Because he believed that the Talmud, the Torah tradition, the Masorah of our Torah tradition, is so powerful that there can't be any mistakes in it. It's impossible that the Masorah is wrong. So some yo-yo who's writing the Sefer Torah, he made a mistake. But our traditions of the learning scholarly community can't be wrong. Because this is passed from generation to generation. But what happened was, all of the Sofrim got together during the time of the Rashba, and they said, Mr. Rashba, how many tshuvas have you written? You wrote 4,000. Okay, so most of the time you didn't deal with how to write a Sefer Torah. You dealt with one little thing, that is a mistake. This is what we do. Don't tell us how to do our job. We have been writing Sefer Torah for our lives, for our whole life. Don't tell us, Mr. Rashba, don't tell us how to write a Sefer Torah. And this has been manifest itself in several other major debates between crafts and the rabbinic community. There are certain things in the context of the mitzvah of milah. How much of the foreskin has to be taken off? It's called tzitzin. Whole debate about it. And there was a time in the 15th century when they said, you guys are doing it all wrong. Because the halacha, the gemara is, you have to take off this and this and this and this piece of skin also. The ma'alim ignored them. Why? Don't tell me how to do my job. We deal with milah all the time. You read one gemara in Masechta Shabbos, all of a sudden you became an expert in milah. But the rabbinic community believed in this incredible validity of Torah Shebaal Peh. Even though, as we see in our little discussions from time to time, that it's not exactly the most compelling piece of logic, it's not the most logical thing to come to conclusion. It seems far-fetched and stretched, but according to the scholarly rabbinic world, there are no mistakes in this. So much so that it even contradicts the Torah, and the Torah is wrong according to the Rashba. Very strange. Very strange.
So what do you make of that?
What do I make of what?
The debate. There's one hand, like in a certain way, the mimetic tradition, where like you, like mm-hmm. how we all Most Jews,
that is correct,
follow things with what our parents, and the feeling was, if it's been done for through Europe from before Europe,
correct,
from the gospel,
that was Reb Chaim Soloveitchik's major essay.
Right.
Exactly. You just watch your parents do things. That's exactly what that's what the Seifrim said.
Right. And really,
my father was a Seifer, and this is the way he wrote a Sefer Torah. Don't tell me how to write a Sefer Torah.
Way,
exactly.
He's right, because
I grant you that.
Survive.
I grant you that.
On the other hand, if you have our leaders and our rabbis who we go to for
guidance,
opinion,
I know,
and they're saying, so how do you reconcile?
I don't have a good answer. I really don't. I don't have a good answer.
And Rashba can't be saying that about everything in the Gemara, because there are disagreements.
No, he's saying that where there is an accepted opinion in the Gemara, and it's based on a text, where the Gemara darshans a text, and there is an inconsistency in the text in the Gemara, the text is wrong, the Gemara is right. That's where he said it. Now, tonight, we're going to see a different possibility, of different source for mitzvah sasesh's mangrama, which is somewhat more direct. Not a four-step, not a four-pronged step, but a direct step. You're not going to like it either, but it's at least it's more direct. And the consequences of the discussion are fascinating, as it has several different applications in assuming, in challenging the Gemara's assumption. So I bracketed page number one for you. Rav Achar bar Yaakov Omar. Rav Achar bar Yaakov offers an alternate solution. Omar Kra, the Pasuk says, V'haya Licha le'ot al yadcha ulezikaron bein einecha. This is the mitzvah of tefillin. There shall be a sign on your hand and a remembrance between your eyes. Lema'an tihiyeh Torah Hashem beficha, so that the Torah of God will be forever on your lips, in your mouth. By wearing the tefillin, somehow it reminds you about the Word of God. So the phrase Leman Tihyeh Torah is a broad sweeping statement to the Torah in general, and the mitzvah identified here is tefillin. So he says, Huksha kol haTorah kula letefillin. I just compare Torah Hashem, the entire Torah, to what? To tefillin. Ma tefillin mitzvah taseh shez man grama vin Hashem p'turot. Just as tefillin is a mitzvah saseh, which is time-bound, and women are exempt. Af kol mitzvah taseh shez man grama nashim p'turot. So too, by the rest of the Torah, they're exempt from that mitzvah as well. End of discussion. End of statement. What do you make of it? Again, I'll just say it again. I compare all of Torah, Torah Hashem, to the mitzvah of tefillin. And I state, just as tefillin is a mitzvah taseh shez man grama, which women are patur, so too they are patur for what? For every other mitzvah taseh shez man grama. That's exactly what it does say. But what's missing? What's missing? What has he not really established in this derivation? How do I know the women are torah from tefillin?
From Talmud Torah, but
he doesn't stop comparing it to Talmud Torah. So Rav Achar bar Yaakov, what he is doing is he simply says there is no homiletic source to teach us that women are exempt from mitzvah saseshes mangrama. There isn't. We know that they are exempt from tefillin. We just know. Torah Shebaal Peh. It's not learnt out from anything. Once I know it is given that women are exempt from Talmud Torah, now I ask the question, why do I have that broad sweeping statement, Lema'an Tihyeh Torat Hashem, so that all of the Torah shall be in your mouth in the context of the parsha of tefillin? I know the answer to that question. Not to teach me this halacha. Not to teach me that halacha. But what does he say this teaches me? I compare tefillin to the rest of the Torah. Just as by tefillin, there is an established fact. Women are exempt from tefillin, and it happens to be in Sata Seishas Man Grama. so too all other mitzvot ha-Torah, which happen to be Zman Grama, Nashim Pturot. So what he does is, he cuts out a lot of the baggage and goes directly to proving that they are exempt from all mitzvot without proving what? That they're really exempt from the mitzvot of Tefillah. That he takes as an assumption. It's an assumption. It's Torah Shebaal Peh. Why? Because his grandfather told him that. Grandfather told him that. And if you do, and I would be willing to bet that none of the women in Rav Acha Bar Yaakov's time wore tefillin. Well, how come they're not wearing tefillin? How come my mother didn't wear tefillin? How come your mother didn't wear tefillin? Why? Must be the pater from tefillin. Because good Jews do mitzvot. So if your mother observed Shabbos but she didn't put on tefillin, must be she's exempt from tefillin. So his simple observation of the lifestyle of the religious community taught him that women are exempt from tefillin. Now, I just make the next leap. Okay, I know that. What about sukkah? Maybe women ate in the sukkah. I don't know. Probably not too many, but maybe they did. How do I know they're exempt from sukkah and exempt from lulav? Because I compare Torah Hashem to the mitzvah of tefillin. So it's a little straighter, but what's lacking is a real compelling source to start off the whole discussion. How do I know that women are exempt from mitzvah aseh shezman grama because of tefillin? Yeah.
If he's observing that women are not wearing tefillin and therefore he's deducing that they're exempt also from other things, it's surprising that they would know not to be wearing tefillin, but they would not, that they would be sitting in the sukkah, they would be taking a lulav, which you would think that, it seems like if he's basing his principle on an original observation.
I'm not sure. I'm just suggesting. How did he know that women are not exempt? Because no women are wearing tefillin. Just look at every day.
Is what you're saying in a way, women, the fallback position is women don't do mitzvot. So you only have to demonstrate that they're chayavot if it's not shezman grama. Because his observation is women are outside the
midst of it. No, I was just saying that it would seem to me that you wouldn't have to establish the principle that because of tefillin we can now learn, because it's related to all the mitzvahs, we can now say they're exempt from everything, that we should have been able to say, we see they don't do any of them, and therefore I wouldn't need to make this derivation at all. They don't do lulav, they don't do any of these things, and that, if I'm basing it on an observation.
I hear what you say. Well, the Gemara is going to ask the next question. Well, why don't you say they're exempt from every mitzvah because it is? That's the most next question. Next question. Yes.
I was going to say something like that because, like, you could, instead of observing that it's a mitzvah to say Shazman Brahma, you could observe that it's a mitzvah to be like Lamakom. So you say, okay, women are not allowed to vote.
In fact, the Gemara is going to ask that type of a question. It's the next Gemara's question. Correct. Let's read on another line or two.
Right. No. Sometimes we're logical.
Says the Gemara. Mitzvat asei shezman grama nashim pturot. Now that you somehow formulated and limited your derivation, that they are exempt only from what? Mitzvat asei shezman grama. Inference. Michlal. The mitzvahs asei shehelo hazman grama nashim chayavot. This would teach you that what? That if a woman, that if there is a mitzvah which is not comparable to tefillin, then you have to say women are obligated. Because how did I establish the fact that they're exempt from mitzvahs asei shehazman grama? Because tefillin is a mitzvah asei shehazman grama, and I compare all of Torah to that. But the inference would be, if you have a mitzvah saseh, even as bein adam lamakom, even if it's bein adam lamakom, but if it's not zman grama, you'd have to do it. Says the Gemara, ha nicha leman da amar, tefillin mitzvah saseh shezman grama. This only works out well according to one opinion. There is a debate about tefillin itself. If you believe that tefillin is a mitzvah sasashis man grama, under those circumstances, your little derivation can make some sense. Elo leman de omar tefillin mitzvah sasay shelo hazman grama. Maika lemeimar. What can you possibly say? You're stuck. Because if you're going to use tefillin and it's a mitzvah sasay shelo hazman grama, what absurd conclusion are you going to come to? We would exempt from every single mitzvah because they don't have to wear tefillin. That's ludicrous.
Sounds good.
So let's. That's exactly what we're going to understand now. What is the debate? What's the debate of the two opinions and the various ramifications? Okay. So there are two factors that you have to consider. One, there is a phrase in Shmot chapter 13, which is a pasuk that is concluding a unit which describes the exodus of Mitzrayim, reminds us about Korban Pesach, and also includes the mitzvah of tefillin. You'll take a look at Shmot 13. I should have just photostated it for you. It would have been much easier. But that's what Shmot 13 is. The parsha of Kadesh Li Kol Bechor. So you have references to the exodus of Mitzrayim, references to the Korban Pesach, and references to the tefillin. The last pasuk of that unit reads, I quote, write it down, Vishomarta et hachuka hazot limo ada mi yamim yamima. Vishomarta et hachuka hazot limo ada mi yamim yamima. Literally translated, you shall observe this statute in its proper time from day to day. So the way to translate the word b'yamim yamima will depend on what mitzvah, which chok is it referring to. It says, v'shamarta et hachuka hazot, observe this statute. Which statute am I talking about? Am I talking about Korban Pesach? Am I talking about Tefillin? Which one is it? Of course, it's a machlokes. Some say it refers to Korban Pesach. Korban Pesach. In which case, you say, observe, remember to observe this statute in its proper season from year to year. Miyamim yamima, from year to year. On an annual basis, you bring the Korban Pesach. That's one pasuk. In which case, there is not a bloody source in the text which tells us that tefillin are to be worn only during the day. No place it says we're tefillin at night too.
Why can't it be referring to all three of them?
Just give me one second. Hold on. However, if the phrase chuka hazot, this single cha, it could have been, that's what they understood it, is referring to tefillin, not to Korban Pesach, then they understood that the word miyamim yamima means from day to day, and you don't wear tefillin at night.
And that's like he once told us, yamim yamim, one word is extra, and there's an extra word to make a drash on, and that's why the second would be yamim and la'layla. You know, you said that before, like when it doubles, if the word is just there, okay, but if it's doubled, then we have the option to make a drash.
That's correct. And there are other times in the Chumash where the word yamim yamim happens to be years, even though it does, it happens other times. So it depends which of the two you decide to read to determine, number one, whether tefillin is a mitzvah only during the day, in which case, of course, tefillin is a mitzvah of Zman Grama. Doesn't apply at night, like tzitzis. Tzitzis only applies during the day. Of course it's Zman Grama. But if the reading of that particular phrase is a reference to Korban Pesach, there is no source that tells us you should not wear tefillin at night. In fact, therefore, according to the halacha, you should wear tefillin at night. And therefore, thus far, there'd be no time when tefillin is not applicable, hence it's not a mitzvah sasei man grum. Then there is a second possibility, which we have to negate according to this Gemara, Shabbos and Yom Tov. There are those who claim that on Shabbos and Yom Tov you do not wear tefillin, not supposed to wear tefillin, because you don't need the oath, that sign, because Shabbos and Yom Tov are itself an oath of God's affection for Am Yisrael. You don't need the tefillin oath, so you don't wear it. Okay, well, if tefillin is not on Shabbos and Yom Tov, once again, it's Zman Grama. Others deny that, like, that idea. And that Al Pi Din, you're supposed to wear tefillin on Shabbos as well. Supposed to wear tefillin on Shabbos as well? So how come there hasn't been a Jew in the last 5,000 years who has worn tefillin on Shabbos? There's a rabbinic decree against wearing tefillin on Shabbos. What's the rabbinic decree? Yes. Because you're going to be wearing your tefillin and for some reason you're going to have to take them off. Take them off. You'll take them off because you come into a cesspool area, you have to go to the bathroom, you're not allowed to tefillin, you go to the bathroom. No, then you're going to carry them in the street on Shabbos. So the rabbi said, we suspend the mitzvah of tefillin just as they suspend which other mitzvah because we're afraid you're going to carry on Shabbos. Shofar, tefillin, megillah, and so on and so forth. But in theory, tefillin is worn on Shabbos too. So if you believe that tefillin are worn on Shabbos and tefillin are worn at night, tefillin is not a mitzvah sasei man grama.
Were they ever worn at night in practice?
No. There is a rabbinic concern not to wear tefillin at night. What is the rabbinic concern? The rabbinic concern is out of concern for the sanctity of tefillin. When somebody is sleeping, you never know if you're going to pass gas or not. And that is a violation of sanctity of tefillin. So they said take them off before at night when you go to sleep. But according to Torah law, you're supposed to wear tefillin at night too. Therefore, the Gemara asks the question. How does Rav Acha bar Yaakov automatically make an assumption that tefillin teaches us that women are exempt from every mitzvah sasei man grama? Maybe tefillin is not a mitzvah sasei man grama. Women are obligated to wear tefillin. No, that only says that by tzitzis. Yeah. So that's the Gemara. Ma'ika lamema vashke min jagin. What can you say? There's nothing to say. You're stuck, Rav Acha bar Eder Avika. So I want to show you several other areas where this particular debate came to the fore. Go to page number 3 for a minute. And here we have the following situation. The Gemara in Erevin talks about the following situation. There is a fire in a house. Okay. Get out of the house. That's true. Get out. But I have a sefer Torah or tefillin in the house. Should I let it burn? Or should I carry it into the Rishus HaRabim?
You're talking
about Shabbos. On Shabbos, of course, on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, undoubtedly, you cannot carry anything in the Rishus HaRabim. Rather have it burnt. You cannot carry anything in the Rishus HaRabim. Cannot. But by tefillin, there's a little possibility I can put my tefillin on. And walk out wearing my tefillin, not carrying them.
I'll be wearing my tefillin. So now, the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, and then we'll see Rashi's comments, that you can go and save one pair at a time. Only one pair at a time. Well, let's assume there is time. And I don't even, I give you the exaggerated case. There are other cases. There is a safe, there are a pair of tefillin left outside in the street. And who knows what the gangs are going to do with that. So what do I want to do? My house is not burning down, just the opposite. I want to bring the tefillin in from the street and bring them into the house.
Why don't you do the same thing? Stand on the street, stay where you are, right?
Correct. So if it's a Sefer Torah, the Gemara says, sorry. If the vandals are going to come and rip the Sefer Torah up, there's no answer. Because the only way to save the Sefer Torah is to do what?
Yeah.
Carry Chil Shabbos. You are not the Chal Shabbos to save the Sefer Torah. You're not. But by tefillin, we can use a chachma. We can bring in zug, one pair at a time. So now let's start playing with what's happening, whether Shabbos you're supposed to wear tefillin, or Shabbos you're not supposed to wear tefillin. Let's see what's going to happen.
The basis of wearing your key.
What?
The basis of wearing your key on you.
Of course. Everyone who grew up of pre-Eruv times had a tie clip. Had a tie clip with a key. Or a lady had a pin. A little gold pin. Everybody had. We couldn't survive without it. Otherwise you'd be locked into your apartment, you know, for a whole Shabbos. Everybody knows that. In fact, kids today have no clue what it means you're not allowed to carry on Shabbos. I have always proposed at the RCBC, one Shabbos a year, we should announce the Eruv is down.
Yeah.
Not take it down, but announce that it's down. We should check the calendars if there's no bar mitzvah. A winter time where there's no bar mitzvah in a shul. One Shabbos. Let's find one Shabbos just for the education that a child should learn that there are 39 melachot, not 38.
Yeah.
You tell you, the one time I remember a couple of years ago, there was a big storm.
Uh-huh.
Leave me out of carry. What are you crazy? Can't carry tissue? What are you crazy? Can't carry my book? Leave me out to carry. Kids looked at you like you're crazy.
Yeah.
That is correct. That's what they asked. Yes. That's what happened. You stayed home with your babies?
Yes.
That's what my mother did all the time. And all of you did that. And many rabbis opposed the Eruv because they didn't want the babies in shul. In this community.
They kept the shul quieter.
Opposed the Eruv because they didn't want kids in shul.
My mother grew up in Yerushalayim, and when she came to America, she didn't know what it meant not to carry.
Really? Yeah, Yerushalayim. That's it. Yeah. Okay? So now, the Gemara is now going to quote a debate between Rabbi Gamliel and Tanna Kamma. So I bracketed the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Gamliel's words. Tanna Kamma sovar, Shabbos zman tefillin. That's the Gemara. Now comes Rashi. Umishum hatzalah, in order to save the tefillin, lo mishrei bei tfei min ha-mitzvah. I can't allow more than the mitzvah would have allowed. How many pairs of tefillin are you allowed to wear at one time?
One.
Dilav tachshit minu. What's a tachshit?
Jewelry.
It's not jewelry. Exactly. If tefillin were nothing but jewelry, I can wear 20. Can you wear 20 pins? Do you wear 20 pins? Two? You wear two pins? Let's see the Shabbos. You wear two pins.
Two earrings.
Yeah. I'll
Okay, that's a good point. She knows. We'll get to that in a second. That's not because they're wearing two.
I know.
It's wearing two is two different ones.
Different,
we'll get it.
Two different opinions.
V'chol shekein, the kevel des mantfilin hu, since it is mantfilin, ikar baltosif. If you're going to wear two pairs of tefillin, you'll be violating a prohibition. What prohibition? Now to wear more than one pair of tefillin. Because you have to have four parshiyos on, not eight parshiyos on. So if I hold... That was Tova's question. I'll get to that in a second.
So the... So Rashi says, if I hold that Shabbos is man tefillin hu, I will explain to you why I only can put on one pair of tefillin at a time. Because the mitzvah is to wear tefillin on Shabbos. The rabbi said don't because you might carry. So we're going to waive the rabbinic in order to save the pair of tefillin. That's what we're waiving. We're waiving the prohibition, the rabbinic prohibition of wearing tefillin in a public thoroughfare because you might carry in order to save the pair of tefillin.
It's turning it around. You're doing it so you won't carry. But you're saving them.
Correct.
That's
correct. But you're saving. But if you hold it, you can only wear one pair of tefillin. So Tova and Susan raised the question, what do you mean? What happens if you wear Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin? Rashi didn't worry about that because he didn't wear Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin. This is Rashi speaking.
So anyhow, if somebody wears Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin, it's not a violation of Baal Tosef, because there are two different types of tefillin. The only difference between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam is the order of the parashiyot and the tefillin shel rosh. There are four parashiyot. How do you place them in the order? That's the only difference. And indeed, Karo says, the way a real good Jew should wear it is to wear them both at the same time. You wear Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam right behind it.
Wow.
Right behind it.
One
because Rashi is more prominent, and then you wrap the you put one up here, one around next, and you wrap all the straps around. So there are some Sephardic Jews in Israel who wear Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam at the same time. Very, very few. The majority of people who are makbid to wear Rabbeinu Tam, primarily Chassidim, they wear Rashi's tefillin until after Kedusha. Then they take off Rashi's tefillin, then they put Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin on, they say Kriya Shema again, and then they wear Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin until the end of davening. When I retire, I'm going to wear Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin also. My grandfather used to wear Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin. So I said, when I retire, I got all day, I'll wear Rashi's Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin.
Is that one of the only things where you hedge your bet by doing two things? Because there's no other thing where you, usually we pick one authority.
Excellent question. You know who was asked that question? The Vilna Gaon. And the Gaon was asked, how come, you know, people are mocking, and you don't, Mr. Gaon. So the Gaon said, you think the only other different pair of tefillin is Rabbeinu Tam? There are 64 versions of the tefillin. That's what the Gaon writes out. It takes every single possible shita with everything, there are 64. He says, I'm going to waste my time putting 64 different pairs of tefillin? I can't do that. So what's the yichus of Rabbeinu Tam? I don't. The world accepted Rashi, and that's the halacha, and that's it. For some people, I don't know why. I have to do a study. Why suddenly did Rabbeinu Tam? And historians, archaeologists will tell you that the debate of Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam goes way before Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. Apparently, it was Bavel versus Eretz Yisrael. Very, very old debate. That Rabbeinu Tam was Israel and Rashi's was born in Bavel. That is correct. Yes. That's what many historians say. The debate goes way above and beyond that. So that's if you hold tefillin, Shabbos man tefillin, I can only put on one pair of tefillin because of the concern of Baal Tosef. So I allow you to wear a pair of tefillin in the public thoroughfare, suspend the rabbinic requirement of taking them off so that you will not wind up carrying in order to save this pair of tefillin, but only one at a time. Next Rashi. Ram Gamliel Savar, Lav zman tefillin hu. Rambam Gamliel is of the opinion Shabbos is not zman tefillin. So then, why are you allowed to wear your tefillin on Shabbos to save it? Are you allowed to just take a paper? Can I carry a paper bag on my head on Shabbos and say I'm not carrying?
If it's not your usual.
Exactly, it's not my usual.
About the rain hands. Exactly.
So now let's take a look at Rav Gamliel. Rashi says, "V'hainu time of the Shoru Rabban Lahatzala." Why did the rabbis allow you to save a pair of tefillin? Mishum the tachshitu.
Well, just said it wasn't.
It's just. That was the first opinion. We said there's a mitzvah to wear tefillin. The other one says there's no mitzvah to wear tefillin. So why did he put on tefillin? That's his jewelry. He wants to have nice jewelry on his head. Hilkach, kol kama dehevetachshit. As long as you can identify it as a piece of jewelry, shari. Umishum baltosif lekahacha. There is nothing to be concerned about Baal Tosif. Why? You can't be Mosif on a mitzvah that doesn't exist. You can only have Baal Tosif on a mitzvah that exists. If there is no mitzvah that exists, there's no Baal Tosif. They ain't come mitzvahs to film klam. Elo kishar malbush. It's like any other piece of clothing.
So you could save six pairs.
Oh.
You could have your wife put it
on. Oh. Hold on. So now... Now comes the question. Yes. Comes the question. Are you allowed to wear two hats, one on top of the other?
No.
What would you say?
No.
No.
Right. Why not? So now, here is the inconsistency of Rashi. First, Rashi identified as a takshit, and then at the end, what did he switch to?
Malbush.
A malbush. There's a very big difference. Here is exactly the difference. If you perceive it nothing but a tachshit, you're allowed to wear many tachshitim. Not limited to one piece of jewelry on Shabbos. But if it's a malbush, you have to see what the norm happens to be. Norm happens to be. And people typically don't wear one hat on top of the other. Typically don't.
No, I mean, sometimes. I mean, it depends on how you want to define hat. But like, for example, it was the style for a long time in Israel to wear multiple kafiot to make a pattern out of it. In that case, that was...
Maybe it would be. The Chassidim always had the issue about wearing that plastic rain hat. That plastic, there was always discussion about it.
Now they have the hooded coats.
Right, yeah. That's right. But that was part of the issue. What do you think people wear plastic hats on top of that? Top of that? They don't wear that. Oh yeah, you do, when it rains you do it. So there was some discussion about that. So
that's a very bad argument, if you ask me, because it's not jewelry. You know, even with jewelry, you can't just make something say something's jewelry or an ornament like that.
Like keys.
It's convenient. So even that, people do argue about that.
Sure. Yes, they do. People argue.
I don't think you can just say you want to wear it because you want to save it. You're not
correct. That's the only reason why you want to do it.
So to suddenly say it's jewelry.
No, decorative, adornment, ornament, yes, decorative.
That's also like you don't put decorations.
No, but you know,
he
would never have done it. That is correct. You're right. You're right.
The point that you would let us say for Torah, but you would go through all these permutations to wear it to fill in and call it, it doesn't make sense to me. If it's not right, it's not right.
Yes, they did. They did. Because of the mitzvah of tefillin. The mitzvah of tefillin was all day.
They used to wear it. You know, in the beginning, they did.
Yeah, people wore tefillin because of the mitzvah, not because of the jewelry.
It doesn't matter if it's a gold key that
with diamonds,
or the key that you attach to be on your wrist.
So it's There's no doubt that it's not exactly what you and I would call the most decorative piece of jewelry somebody should be wearing. In fact, he never wears it. It's only because it's burning. The house is burning. Or there's something outside. So I grant you that Rashi here is like hedging. First he calls it a tachshit. Then he calls it a malbush. A malbush. Which is a little unusual. A little unusual. Now, I'm going to bring in something. Let me ask you this. Somebody raised it. I don't remember who. I would give you the credit. Can we ask a woman to put on a pair of tefillin as well? Plus a pair of tefillin and save another pair of tefillin on Shabbos. What might you say about that? Just knowing, assuming that we operate on the assumption that they're exempt from the mitzvah of tefillin.
I would say yes.
Okay. On what grounds?
On the grounds that it is not usur.
Not baltosif.
It's not right. There's no baltosif. It's
good.
Usur.
Right.
Utter.
Right.
And it's a takshit.
Okay, so if you want to say it's a takshit for a man,
right.
It's a takshit for a lady. Okay, you could say that. Tell me why would you say it's not a takshit? What? Oh, excellent point. Excellent point. Listen to it. There is a Yonatan ben Uziel, a Targum, Yonatan ben Uziel, in Dvarim chapter 23, on the phrase, Lo tilbash isha klei gever, Lo tilbash isha klei gever, a woman is not permitted to wear man's clothes, v'ish, a lo tilbash klei isha, a man's not allowed to dress up in women's clothing. The illustration given by Yonatan ben Uziel is talitaya utfilaya, putting on talis and tefillin. That's often quoted as to why women should not wear tefillin and talis, because there's Yonatan ben Uziel that it's a beged ish. He is alone. I'm not dismissing him. He's alone in using that particular argument. He does say it, but if so according to him, you could never say that it's a malbush for a woman because it's prohibited to be worn. And I would also suggest that he would not allow you to declare that as a takshit either. You can't wear a piece of jewelry that you're not allowed to wear. You're not allowed to wear it. But assuming that he is not correct, that he's not correct, that's not what the pasuk had in mind, and it is not what the pasuk had in mind. The pasuk had in mind that you should not dress up in the opposite clothing to gain entree into the other locker room. A man should not dress up a woman and go into the ladies' locker room. A woman should not dress up as a man so that she can get into a men's locker room and engage in inappropriate activities. That's the purpose of the law. Not a permission to wear talis and tefillin. Because what would be the parallel to a man? A woman can't wear tefillin. What's the power? Yonatan doesn't have anything. Oh, I shouldn't wear, a mink coat. He doesn't have that. I don't know. Don't know.
Well, now you raise the question of what is it that makes something a beged ish? Because in this the case specifically of tefillin, is it that there's something inherent in the tefillin that makes them a beged ish, and therefore
I'm
not allowed to wear them? Because the only reason that women aren't allowed to wear them is because women don't wear them is not... is because it's a Zman Brahma issue.
Right, not that's because it's Beged Ish.
Right.
That's correct. I just wanted to let you know that there is such an opinion, so when you go shopping tomorrow, you stand online, Glad Express is open till 9 tomorrow night, from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. tomorrow night. So when you get online, there's a line there, you can just tap this, Yonatan ben Uziel says, that's Klei Gever. Fine. Because somebody said, is it a beged? That's why I brought that in. But what emerges as a result of all of this? What emerges? If you should assume that women, that tefillin is a mitzvah sasheshes mangrama, either by virtue of the fact that it's not worn at night, or because it's not worn on Shabbos, then Rav Acha Bar Yaakov has a leg to stand on. How did he exempt women from all mitzvot aseishas mangrama? By comparing Torah to tefillin. Where did he get tefillin? It was an assumption that he made. But if we should adopt the position that we wear tefillin at night and you wear tefillin on Shabbos, then the question would be, well, if you're going to make this comparison, women should be exempt from every mitzvah, not just mitzvah sasashis man grama. And that borders on the absurd. So the Gemara at least will stop. The Gemara comes up with a kvetch answer. It's not for us tonight. But that's what's happening here. So this is a second possibility how we establish this fact, even though it will be difficult, should you assume that tefillin is a mitzvah asay she'ein hazman grama. Yeah.
Is the point that Rabbi Yaakov is making man's get to it to Shemitah, is that also the source for women not learning?
No. No, he doesn't do the reverse. No. No, absolutely not. Because learning is not a mitzvah asay she'ein hazman grama. He doesn't start with Talmud Torah. That was the other guy. He just starts... No, because Torah means the Torah in general. It means, he doesn't mean... Torah Sheshen doesn't mean learning according to... It means the mitzvos of the Torah. The mitzvos of the Torah. Yes?
So if you're of the view that tefillin is something from the Kohanim of Torah, but
right.
So then women could wear tefillin, right?
100%.
It's coming up in schools now.
Yes.
People who say it's forbidden are of the view that it is forbidden.
No, that's not only it. There is another, there is a Ramah that says that you should protest women wearing tefillin today. Ramah says it. You should protest it. Even though the Ramah allows women to observe every other mitzvah sasashis man grama and make a bracha, as opposed to Karo, who does not allow you to make a bracha on a mitzvah sasashis man grama, Ramah says you should protest a woman wearing tefillin. We don't know exactly why, but that's what he said.
Didn't Rashi's daughters wear tefillin?
Yes, they did. There were others as well. Michal, the daughter of Shaul, the Gemara in Erevin, says she wore tefillin. It says it black and white in the Gemara. There have been women who did wear tefillin. But not getting into that again tonight.
That's where they're hanging their hat and everything.
Gone through that enough. What?
Benchmark of what women, like, even though we can do everything else, it's
yes.
Such a benchmark.
I know.
It's like of all of them, so this is the one that they use.
Yes. Yes. I actually, I told this to a couple of people. After that whole hullabaloo, I went to Rabbi Schechter and I told him, Rabbi Schechter, you have to understand the clientele at SAR. You have to understand the clientele. This happened last year. It was right around the Wittenberg wrestling tournament. Okay. Wittenberg, you know the Wittenberg tournament, right?
No.
Is a wrestling tournament that YU recruitment office sponsors. Yeshiva high schools across the country, they come and wrestle Washington's birthday weekend for 4 days. It's beautiful. Very nice. If you like wrestling.
Shabbaton is good.
That's it. Very nice. Anyhow. I went. So TABC always participates. We won the championship 2 years in a row. Very nice. I come there and I see the SAR team. Every single one of them has a buzz cut. Every single wrestler.
Does that mean
no? Nothing on the side here. Just a little strip like a mohawk in the middle. Every single wrestler. And I said to myself, oh my God, what's Tully going to say when he gets to school the day after? Is he going to allow him to school or not?
Yeah.
You have an environment where you're fighting for the soul of every single kid. In today's times, as I always say, I am not shocked when kids get off the derech. I'm shocked when they remain on the derech. What is there to attract them to remain loyal to Torah mitzvot? It's a shot. It's a miracle. So when you're fighting that atmosphere out there, you have much greater things to worry about than what? Than two girls who want to put on tefillin. And you have to understand, it's not that, you know, in that type of an environment, you have to make a decision what battles you're going to fight. And after I explained to him, he said, you know, if somebody told me this in advance, I would never have said anything. Well, that's what he told me.
Really?
I went to, I went once to YU. He was busy, couldn't talk to me. I came back a second time, and I just want to talk to you. Because I was identified in the article. I told him, I just want to know what's going on. In this environment, this is not the issue that you go crazy about. He didn't go ahead and say, I want every girl to wear tefillin starting tomorrow morning. He didn't say that. He didn't want to make an issue. He's got bigger issues to worry about than those two girls wearing tefillin. That's all he said. And, you know, so it calmed down, but that, you know, and the Mohawks just highlighted it for me. Because I would never allow those kids into school. If they came to school the next day, I'd say, sorry, buddy, wait a week until your hair grows back. I am not letting you into class. Because a Ben Torah does not go dressed like that. Does not come into school in such a fashion.
Couldn't someone say there are bigger issues than the haircut?
Just well, like
there
are bigger issues.
Yeah, they can. Okay. There are bigger issues than that.
Yeah, but the feeling she wants to do something.
Correct. She went to a mitzvah. She's talking to the Rabbeinu Shalom. These guys are not talking to the Rabbeinu Shalom with a buzz cut. Because God doesn't wear buzz cuts.
That I know for sure.